Hey, welcome to Night School 31, and we're going to be surpassing the regular Every Night's a School Night in number of episodes here with Night School one of these days. I need to start doing those again, so it's music and not just me. Music and not just me, that's the tagline. But I'm going to give you some perspective and bring you into the moment, because that's the exact topic here today, perspective and being in the moment, because that's not an embarrassing thing to say. Not at all. It's not embarrassing to say this episode is about perspective and being in the moment. But those are good ideas to think about, and perspective in particular, because you hear about people getting perspective, or something gives you perspective, or even internally, you'll think about something that will give you perspective, which basically means it takes you out of your current cone of vision, and you suddenly kind of see things in a different light that is ideally better for you. Or when something gives you perspective, it kind of puts you in check. And usually when people talk about getting perspective, it's kind of, it's something that's supposed to help you. It's good for you. It's better for you when you get perspective. But I think something that's important to think about is how getting perspective impacts other people. And I think a good example I could use is if you, say you had to take your dog to the vet, and your dog is going to be okay, but it was sick for a little bit, and then you have all these vet bills, and your dog was barking along the way, and you see a person you know, and you're complaining about that. You know, you're like, oh, you know, the vet was really busy, so I had to wait a long time, and I had to pay $200, you know, and you're just complaining about this big process of taking your dog to the vet. And then you find out the person you're talking to, their dog just died yesterday. Something like that, you know, where, oh, the gravity of their situation is much, much harder. And here you were complaining about something. Your dog's alive. Everything's okay, you know, with that in mind. And sure, you went through some level of inconvenience and stress, but here their dog died. And, you know, having perspective would be, you know, to not maybe not be complaining about all of that. Maybe you casually mention, your dog had some trouble, whatever, and then they bring up the fact that their dog died and this and that. But I see it a lot when it comes to complaints. People complain. And I think what gave me perspective when it comes to complaining, and let me clarify too, I don't complain much. I will say that. I try not to complain much. I do point out weird neurotic observations about people. I talk about things that confuse me, that I struggle to wrap my brain around. But aside from cars and bad drivers, I don't feel like I actually complain a lot. And I know I do. I mean, I of course do. I'm not saying I don't complain. But one thing I try not to do is to complain, or God forbid, whine. Simply the word whine, what that brings to mind is horror to me. I never want to be accused of making a sound that could be described as a whine. Unless, of course, I'm, you know, getting an ankle lock. Someone's twisting my ankle literally or something, and I have a reason to whine. Whine. The word wine sounds like a wine. It's a good descriptive word. But I try not to complain. And I think growing up, one thing that really helped me with that was my mom, who grew up very poor. And she had, God, I was going to say 9 brothers and sisters, but I'm forgetting how many she had. I think I was going to say she was 1 of 9 children, but now I'm thinking there were 7. I should know this. Either way, it was a big, poor farm family. So I think whether it was 7 kids, 9 kids, whatever it was a very, very poor family, bipolar mom, who was selectively abusive to some kids and not others. And my mom, she didn't abuse my mom. Because there were 3 different fathers involved, and you know, we're going back. You know, my mom was born in 1948, so for a woman to have had a bunch of children with 3 different fathers was an especially dark black mark to have at that time. So either way, it was a hard situation. And growing up, I used to kind of get annoyed a little bit because my mom would bring up being poor and some of the experiences they had, and not really in a weird sob story way. Not like she was a contestant on American Idol and they had to tell her sob story to get you to feel more excited that she's a good singer. It was just something she would just casually mention. It was just little stories, little things, and it wasn't like, we were so poor. That, you know, it was just, there was a natural She brought it up naturally, I'll say that. But I would get kind of annoyed because it would come up a lot. And because I was spoiled, my sister and I were spoiled, it would feel sometimes like she was trying to guilt us, which she wasn't. I mean, it really, the way that she would bring it up wasn't like she was guilting us at all. And I recognize now that she was giving us perspective. And sometimes she would point out to other people's hardships, things like that. And when I say we were spoiled, you know, we were given, she was a single mom, and we were given a lot of the things we wanted, but they tended to be things that were, that stimulated our imagination, or things that we could be productive with. Like if she got us toys, it was with the idea that, you know, we were both very creative and imaginative. So, you know, this is me justifying being spoiled. But no, I do feel like there was sort of a purpose to the way that we were spoiled. And part of it too is like when you have a parent who grows up that poor with that sort of, who left home at 16 and had to make it on her own and, you know, came from the background she came from, there is a tendency to overdo it and treat those kids like the way that you wished you had been treated growing up and all of that. But she held us to some pretty strict standards when it came to school, things like that, you know, and behavior. While we got away with a lot in many ways, she definitely put her foot down when it came to certain things. And I'm pretty happy with the way I was raised, all things considered. I think she could have been stricter. I think if I were a parent, I would be stricter. Who knows? Who knows, though? Maybe I could also see myself just spoil. If I had like a daughter, I could see myself spoiling that kid rotten. But to get back to the point, she continually gave us perspective. And at the time, sometimes I would feel like, oh, she's making me feel guilty or this. And I realized that she wasn't trying to make me feel guilty. I was feeling guilty because that was perspective creeping in. Because oftentimes the way perspective is introduced to you isn't subtle. You're complaining about something. You're complaining about your vet bill. Meanwhile, someone tells you, well, my dog died. You know, and your reaction to that is to feel guilty. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You shouldn't beat yourself up, because perspective is a two-way street that never really ends. Because while someone might respond, well, my dog died, they should also have the perspective, you know, despite the grief, they should have the perspective to think, you know, this person who is complaining about their vet bill, that's their reality. They are in their own reality tunnel where that stressed them out, and that's what they were thinking about. That was their day yesterday, and they're just talking about it. They're just venting. They're not trying to make me feel bad or to brag to me about how my dog's alive. You know, guess what? Guess what? Your dog died. My dog's alive. You know, they're not trying to do that. That'd be awful. You know, you should ideally, if you're grounded, have the perspective to be like, you know, that person wasn't trying to bother me. And a lot of that comes down to whether you like the person or not. You know, so many things in life that bother us come down to whether or not you like the person. You know, because if someone's complaining to you about, like, if you love someone and always give them the benefit of the doubt, and they're complaining about something really fucking stupid, you'll just listen to them and nod your head. And, you know, that's what a good relationship is, romantic, friendship, whatever the hell it is. That's what a good relationship is you just kind of, you give someone the benefit of the doubt. But if you don't like someone, or you don't know someone well enough, or you're not sure about somebody, you don't give them the benefit of the doubt oftentimes. But you should kind of, you know, give yourself some perspective, and you don't have to give someone the benefit of the doubt to have some perspective. You can just say, hey, that's the world they're living in. And as long as they're not being horribly destructive, it's okay. As long as they're not trying to hurt me, you know, by complaining about whatever, that's fine. But that is interesting how it's like, it's just these things kind of mirror each other. It's this two-way street where, you know, if you find that somebody else doesn't have perspective, you then can take a step back and gain some more perspective by realizing that, oh, hey, they don't have perspective. So I don't need to react to that in some sort of visceral, urgent way that I might otherwise. But when you're emotionally raw, those things happen. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of conflicts happen, really, is that people are too emotionally raw or high strung or this or that to step back and have that perspective and actually think about something. And, you know, there are obvious ways to have perspective, like thinking like, oh, some people have it worse. Some people live in countries that are far worse off than this, where the standard of living is far lower. And that's kind of the cliche example that you always hear. There are kids starving. There were kids starving in other parts of the world. You know, that song. Jesus, I didn't know I had a song in me. But, you know, there's that old song, you know, that old rhyme where it's true, though. I mean, there are people in Ethiopia. I've seen videos of guys sticking their faces in animals' rear ends, in the rear ends of donkeys, to eat, which I'm not even kidding. I've seen that. You probably have, too, if you've watched National Geographic before. You know, that should put things in perspective, if nothing else. But I don't think you have to, you shouldn't go through life constantly thinking about how horrible other people have it. But I think you should just kind of have a healthy relationship with how good your life is. that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, you should kind of keep things in perspective and be aware of your audience, if nothing else. It obviously helps you when you keep some perspective or gain some perspective. It helps you in your own situation. But like I was saying, it also helps other people. It makes other people feel less bad. It's like, don't complain about how one of your parents did something relatively minor that you never got over when you don't know if the person you're talking to was abused, if they were molested by their parents. You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. And I think in the age of social media, this is especially true, where I'll see some people complain about things in their life, and they just need to vent a lot of the time. The weird thing about these public platforms, though, is that they are public or semi-public. And I feel like we've gotten away from that. I mean, you see more criticism of social media these days than you do any kind of advocacy for them. You know, you don't see people talking about how it's this great outlet, this great way to connect people. It's almost always bad, which I think requires some perspective too. This could get really annoying, just taking one step back. It's like, you know, you have a camera and you're filming something, and then like it turns out there's another camera behind you filming you as you film things, and then there's another camera over here that's filming both of you. That's kind of what it gets into. It gets into this weird sort of, you're just continually taking a step back, and eventually you just don't even feel like a human. You're just seeing yourself from a satellite view, a total out-of-body experience, which is ideal. I mean, that's where we should all be aiming to go, is just a complete out-of-body experience. You know, with perspective, I feel like that also fits into the idea of being in the moment. And that's, speaking of common cliches, you know, I think being in the moment is among the biggest cliches out there. But, you know, so much spirituality, so many spiritual disciplines, so many of people's just personal goals kind of revolve around trying to be in the moment more, trying to be present. Because we are so caught up in everything else, our own bullshit, other people's bullshit. We're just caught up. We're stuck. And it's difficult to know how to get into the moment. It's easy to say, oh, I can lift this cup. I can walk over there if I want to. It's easy to make decisions on a momentary basis. And the funny thing about being in the moment is people often think of it as sort of an automatic thing. Like when you're in the moment, you're not thinking about yourself. But I think that in some cases, you're thinking extra hard. You're ultra aware. It's not that you've lost awareness, although there is something to that sort of flow state where you sort of lose all self-awareness, self-consciousness, and you're just doing something and you're doing it at an extremely high state and you're doing it well. There's something to be said for that form of being in the moment. But I don't think it's exclusively on that end of the spectrum. I think it actually goes to the opposite too, where there are times where you're hyper aware, where you're hyper in the moment. And it can be surreal when you suddenly enter that moment and you are very present and you're aware of it. I had that experience on a walk today. I was walking, it was pouring down rain. I was walking along a street in a very forested area, which describes every fucking where in Washington. I could have been anywhere. No, I was in the desert. I managed to find a desert in the middle of Western Washington today. No, anyway, I was walking down a very wooded street. It was pouring down rain. And if I'm on a walk, I'm thinking, of course, I'm thinking very hard about something, just a weird chain of thoughts. Who knows what led me there? And I'm a hyper-vigilant person, which is a very nice way of saying I'm incredibly paranoid. I look around constantly. I love that word since I learned it, by the way, hyper-vigilant. But I'm constantly looking around. I'm looking to my left, to my right, and I'm also observing things. I love to see things. I love to see little details in my surroundings, whether I'm in a neighborhood or in the woods. I love to just notice things, little things. But it's part of it's also that paranoid, hypervigilant place where I want to be very aware of what's going on. So on that level, I'm always very aware and I'm always very in the moment because I want to be ready. To me, paranoia, hypervigilance, those are fancy ways of saying always ready. I feel like when you're always ready, you know, not in a way where, because there's a difference between being always ready and being ready to like pound someone's face in. You know, there's a difference between that sort of, because we think of paranoia, and this episode's not supposed to be about paranoia, but here we go. But people tend to think about paranoia, the paranoid freak who's just, you know, ready to just fire his gun the second, you know, someone knocks on his door. Like a salesman knocks on a guy's door and he's ready to blast them with a gun because he's so paranoid. But I think of a different form of paranoia as being just always ready. And in sort of a defensive way, but just always prepared to react. And who knows what that reaction is going to be. So with that in mind, I'm always aware and I'm always ready to react. But I'm not always present with that. Despite the fact that I'm aware of my surroundings and I know what's to my left and right and up and down, I might not really be conscious of it. And I'll have these little moments like the one I had today where just, and I don't know what exactly led me there. I was deep in thought and all of a sudden I just kind of like everything just felt brighter and clearer. I was this moment of clarity where suddenly the tree, I was very aware of the exact tree line that I was looking at and I was very aware of the rain coming down. And it was sort of surreal. I would almost describe the experience, it was like under the effects of a very minor intoxicant, say that it almost like, I would say it's something almost like if you're using like a psychedelic drug at a very, very low dose, and things just seem a little different. Things just seem, you know, you're not having hallucinations, you're not having, you don't feel like you've left yourself. You're still the same exact you in the same exact world that you normally experience, but you've gained a new perspective. There we go. Way to work that in. It is like you have a slightly, your perspective is just slightly skewed. I would say it's almost like if you drink a single beer. The problem with this example is that if you drink a beer, you suddenly, you get this euphoria. And it's almost like drinking a beer without the euphoria, where things just feel and look slightly different. Or if you smoke weed and you're just slightly high and no anxiety is kicked in, also no euphoria, so you're not experiencing any of those emotional ups and downs or sensations that you associate with substances. It's just sort of like things just look slightly different, slightly more surreal, and you're just kind of like, whoa. And that happens to me, you know, being sober, especially now. I'm almost 10 months sober. I don't know what it is, at least from alcohol. I haven't smoked weed in many months either. Here's the applause. Give me some fucking applause. Pat me on the back. But really, it's like I think in being sober for the longest amount of time, which is an understatement, longest amount of time in my adult life, I do notice those weird little surreal shifts. And who knows, maybe it's neurological impairment that I wasn't previously aware of. I don't know. But I'll have these little shifts. And I'll be walking and I'll just have a moment where I'm suddenly like, wow, I wasn't really aware of being right here, right now, until just now. And that happened today. And it was just, you know, colors stand out a little bit more. Things might seem a little brighter. But it happens at night, too. It'll happen at night where I'm just like, damn, this is beautiful. This is beautiful. Who knew night could be so beautiful? Me. I'm, that's all I ever talk about. But you'll just have these moments where things just stand out. That's one way to put it, is things stand out. And it is almost like being on a very small amount of a substance. Like, it's just because there is that surreal element. And I love that word surreal, because people think of, you hear surreal and you think of like surrealist painters. You think of Salvador Dali. You think of things like that. Well, it's a melting clock. It's a melting clock. It's so kind of surreal, isn't it? No, but I think that something that's truly surreal isn't something that's like an obvious distortion. You know, something that isn't like too out there. That's surreal. Of course, it's surreal if you're, you know, seeing like something melt that shouldn't melt, or you're, you know, if you're, you are on truly on a psychedelic drug and you're seeing reality distort and you're seeing things that aren't there. Of course, that's surreal. But I think that the word, whenever I think of the word, I think of something that's normal but slightly off, where it's just like this very subtle difference. It's like something is just slightly different than it normally is. And that is when I get, you know, because when something is very different, when something is very off from the way you normally expect it, it's a little too obvious. It's almost like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course this is a weird experience because, you know, it's completely fucking different than the way it normally is. But with something that's just slight, it's, I mean, I could compare it, you could compare it to an object. Say there's an object in your house and you come home from work and it's been moved all the way across the room. Of course you're going to like be like, well, what the fuck happened? Did someone break into my house? Did my cat do that? Like, what happened to that object? But if you come home and it's just slightly different, if it feels like it was just slightly turned facing, just it was moved like 10 degrees a different direction, that's going to make you trip out much more. That's going to make you feel much weirder. In a lot of ways, that sort of subtle movement is a lot more surreal. And it's those sorts of things, like when you get a shift in perspective that's that subtle, that's the sort of stuff that really does something weird to your brain, because you're like, what is happening? What made me realize this? What am I paying attention to? And you question yourself, too. And fortunately, I don't do that. Like when I notice a shift in my perspective that I can't quite explain, because like I was talking about, when you're dealing with people, when it's a social thing and someone tells you something or you find out some piece of information that completely shifts your view, you can kind of like trace it back, you know, or you know exactly what caused you to have that shift in view. But when it's just you, yourself, and your own brain, and something just kind of shifts, it really does make you question your own sanity, for one, but it just makes you question, you know, I guess your own reality tunnel. And I like that term. I like the term reality tunnel because it really describes so much of what our lives are. How's that for profound? I didn't come up with it. I've heard Robert Anton Wilson use that phrase. I've heard a lot of people use it, but I think it's a good way to describe the little individual worlds we are in. And, you know, it's easy to get stuck and it's easy to forget what people know and don't know. It's easy to get to forget that, you know, information that's just old hat to you might be something that somebody else doesn't know. And the fact that they don't know it can put them in a completely different reality tunnel. We're all just tunneling around, just reality tunneling around. But I think at the very least, you know, no matter what sort of lies you tell yourself, no matter what's missing from your life that makes you think that, I don't know where I'm going with that, but no matter what's led you down the path that you're currently on, I think you can always do something to kind of shift your perspective. And if you can find those little moments, you know, talking about being in the moment, I didn't even really get into that. I don't need to. I know I've talked about mindfulness. I know I've talked about meditation. There are all sorts of obvious new age practices, spiritual disciplines, different things you can do to make yourself more centered and in the moment more. But I think that you can have those moments of hyper awareness where you're in the moment and you're aware of it, and you can still enjoy that. You can still be there in the same way you would if you lose yourself while, say, you're having fun. You know, because when you hear in the moment, you think of it like, oh, you lost yourself in the moment and you're having a great time and you're not reflecting on all of those shitty things that have happened to you throughout your life. But then you find out that they weren't so shitty because somebody else has it worse. and your reality tunnel gets a bunch of holes poked in it, because we're all just a bunch of intersecting reality tunnels. Hopefully. I'm kind of banking on that idea. I've kind of invested a lot of my own perspective in the fact that our world is a bunch of intersecting reality tunnels that form a gridlock. It sort of is a gridlock. I think intersecting reality tunnels do kind of become a gridlock where we feel stuck. But in reality, once we realize that those intersecting reality tunnels form a much larger tapestry that is our universe and world, I think we'll be better off, and maybe we won't have to get shocked into perspective all the time. We'll just kind of know that there's a different way of seeing things at all times.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this land.